Well, the topic that I have this morning, what does the scriptures say about swearing? About taking an oath? What do the scriptures have to say about this? And it's a pretty interesting study. As I began to look at it, I also came across not Nathan Batty's lesson, but a sermon by his father, George Batty, who was extensive and comprehensive. Anything you read of George Batty, it is just extensive, the amount of research that he puts into it. So I looked at his thoughts and some thoughts of others. This is very interesting. So I think my goal is today is probably to at least semi-offend everyone in the audience today. I think I can do it, including myself, as we look at the idea of swearing an oath. For a text, I'll turn to Matthew, the 5th chapter. This is from the Sermon on the Mount, Matthew chapter 5, verse 33. Jesus says, and again, you have heard that it was said to those of old, you shall not swear falsely, but shall perform your oaths to the Lord. But I say to you, do not swear at all, neither by heaven, for it is God's throne, nor by the earth, for it is his footstool, nor by Jerusalem, for it is the city of the great king. Nor shall you swear by your head, because you cannot make one hair white or black. But let your yes be yes, and your no, no. For whatever is more than these is from the evil. So what about swearing? What say the scriptures about taking oaths? Are we allowed to? Are Christians allowed to swear to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth in a court of law? Are Christians allowed to make oaths? Are Christians allowed to make vows? And it's a very interesting study that we'll undertake after we take opportunity to go to God in a word of prayer. Well, I'm going to take you back to the year 1994. I remember it pretty well. I was in college. Just think, Cameron, this is what you're going to look like here in a couple of years. I remember like it was yesterday. It doesn't take long. But 1994, there was a song that came out called I Swear. Actually, it came out twice. One time it was a country version. A guy named John Michael Montgomery did it. And then about 2 months later, it was an R&B group. I think it was called All for One. Came out with their version of I Swear. And those are the words, I swear, by the moon and the stars in the sky, I'll be there. You might remember that song. I'll be there for better or worse, till death do us part, I love you. With every beat of my heart, I swear. You might remember that song or not. Is that a proper song? Is that something that we should be singing? Is that what Jesus was talking about when he was talking about swear not? So just keep that lyrics in the back of your mind, because that's kind of the pretty common way we think of it. And our society thinks of that, oh, that's just such a nice adage. Oh, that's just wonderful that, you know, I think we need to be careful of that. By the end of this lesson, hopefully we'll understand why. So what do the scriptures have to say about oaths and about swearing? Well, it starts from the very beginning, I guess, about as long as people could start talking. They started swearing. In fact, in Genesis, the 14th chapter, verse 22, I think this is the first reference to swearing in the Bible, swearing an oath. It's from Abram. It says, to the king of Sodom, I have raised my hand to the Lord. So this concept of raising the hand is he is offering a promise or a vow to God as the witness. Genesis chapter 14, we begin with the idea of swearing to God. Deuteronomy 32, again, for I raise my hand to heaven as I live forever. You know, there's all sorts of little verses and little phrases that you start to pick up, especially in the Old Testament. As the Lord lives. You'll start seeing that over and over. That is an oath. That is a swearing with God as a witness. Now there's one. I'm glad this tradition did not last too long. In Genesis 24, Abraham again offers up an oath. They didn't shake hands back in the old days, apparently. It says in Genesis 24:2, Abraham said, please put your hand under my thigh, and I will make you swear by the Lord. So I don't know what that was, but there was some type of formal ceremony where they would slide the hand underneath the other person's thigh. Luckily, that has just evolved into a handshake today. I think I'd be a little uncomfortable sliding my hand up on some fellow's thigh, but that's in the time of Abraham, that's what was done. So oaths and swearing have been around before the law of Moses. And the law of Moses incorporated as well. Leviticus chapter 19. You shall not steal, nor deal falsely, nor lie to one another. And you shall not swear by my name falsely, nor shall you profane the name of your God. I am the Lord. So the rule was not that they were not allowed to swear. They were not allowed to swear falsely. They could not offer up false oaths. If you vowed a vow to God, you better do it. There was a lot of, if you did not, if you broke a vow that you would swear to the Lord, Leviticus chapter 5, there's a whole process that you had to go through to cleanse yourself from that sin. Now also, I think it's interesting this word profane, that you don't profane the name of God. And it doesn't take too much of a linguistic to figure out that that's where our word profanity comes from. So when we start talking about profanity, that is in reference to profaning the name of God. And people do that on an everyday basis, taking the name of the Lord in vain. So, Deuteronomy 6 and 13. Not only were oaths, it just didn't say don't do them falsely, they were required. Deuteronomy 6 and 13, law of Moses. You shall fear the Lord your God and serve him, and shall take oaths in his name. So under the law of Moses, you were expected to take oaths. It was required. But if you did it, you could not do it falsely. That was the sin. So oaths existed before the law of Moses, and oaths were required by the law of Moses. So it is something that has been done almost from the very beginning. Numbers chapter 30, it's kind of an interesting chapter if you ever have time to look at it. Numbers 30, we might title it the vow chapter. And it is very specific about the types of vows and what happens and when you should do it. The entire chapter is dedicated to vows and oaths and swearing. Now, a vow oftentimes was something that was done to God. An oath, more specifically, was probably between two men. But it all kind of fits together, this concept of oaths and vows and swearing. So in Numbers 31, Moses spoke to the heads of the tribes concerning the children of Israel, saying, "This is the thing which the Lord has commanded. If a man makes a vow to the Lord or swears an oath to bind himself by some agreement, he shall not break his word. He shall do according to all that proceeds out of his mouth." So if you make a vow, you make a promise, you make an oath, it was the responsibility as a child of God to do exactly as you said you were going to do. And if you didn't, if you broke that vow, there were serious consequences. Best I can tell, there's three types of Old Testament oaths. Now, George Batty has some real fancy words that I couldn't even pronounce as far as subject matter, so I just kind of call them what they are. Number one, there was a vow that you could take that would serve as an acquittal of a crime without witnesses. And I have an example of that here in just a second. Second type of vow, or oath, was an official summons, almost that of a court case. And thirdly, there were voluntary vows or oaths that anyone could take. And I noted too here. Do you remember the voluntary vow that old Jephthah made? Very rashly, very stupidly. And it ended up with his daughter. And he made a very stupid offhand remark and made a vow that he would sacrifice the first one he saw, and it was his daughter that came out. I also remember Saul. Remember one time Saul made a real stupid oath in the middle of a battle. He said something like, if anybody eats before the battle is done, then they're going to be cursed. And of course his son Jonathan was off fighting in the battle and did not hear that and ended up eating. Those are voluntary oaths. No one forced Jephthah or Saul to make those rash oaths. And that's normally what happens when we make voluntary oaths. We don't think. We're just talking off the top of our head, and it can have some very serious consequences. But these first two are kind of interesting. The first one is acquittal of a crime without witnesses. In Exodus chapter 22 is an example of this type of oath. It says, if a man, verse 10, delivers to his neighbor a donkey, an ox or a sheep, or any animal to keep, and it dies, is hurt, or is driven away, no one seeing it. And that's the important phrase. There's no witnesses to this event. He says, then an oath of the Lord shall be between them both, that he has not put his hand into his neighbor's goods, and the owner of it shall accept that, and he shall not make it good. So in other words, if there was no witnesses to a particular crime, and the fellow said, I take an oath to God that I did not commit the crime, then the other party had to accept that. So if there was no witnesses, then an oath was binding. Deuteronomy, that's very interesting, little chapter, verse 21. It's kind of hard to understand. But apparently if a man was found dead, if there was a dead body found out by a town, and there were, again, no witnesses, no one knew who committed the crime, they would go out from the town and they would measure a radius and kind of make a big old circle all the way around, and they would interrogate the people. And if they could not find anyone who would admit to the crime, then the elders of the city would come out, and this is what they would say: our hands have not shed this blood, nor have our eyes seen it. In other words, there's no witnesses. Provide atonement, O Lord, for your people Israel, whom you have redeemed, and do not lay innocent blood to the charge of your people Israel. And atonement shall be provided on their behalf for the blood. And so if there was no witnesses to the crime, you couldn't, someone just couldn't come up and say, well, I think that fella right there did it. If there was no witnesses, then whoever was accused, and it could be an entire town that could say, we don't know anything about it, and we're taking an oath to God, and that had to be accepted. The charges were then dropped. So it's kind of an oath of acquittal. This is an interesting one. This is the second type, Leviticus 5 and 1. If a person sins in hearing the utterance of an oath and is a witness, whether he has seen or known of the matter, if he does not tell it, he bears guilt. If you knew and had information about a crime, and you were summoned by the authorities under oath, and you did not offer that information, you can be held accountable even to the point of death. So, our law doesn't have this. Our law, we have what's called the Fifth Amendment. I'm just going to plead the Fifth. I don't have to self-incriminate. I'm not going to incriminate myself. If I've done something wrong, I just don't have to say it. That was not in the Law of Moses. The Law of Moses had no Fifth Amendment right. The Law of Moses had no spousal privilege. In our law, a spouse is not required to testify against their spouse. Same way we have this attorney-client privilege, that the client can tell, can admit to the crime to the attorney, but the attorney is not required to bring that forth in a court of law. That's called privilege. There was no such thing as privilege in the Law of Moses, as far as I can tell. If you had information about a crime and you were under oath, you had to testify. You could not recuse yourself from testimony. And we're going to see an example of this here in just a moment. You may have to bring a sense to it. And what about the vows that were voluntary? I think that's what Ecclesiastes is talking about in chapter 5, verse 2. Do not be rash with your mouth, and let not your heart utter anything hastily before God. For God is in heaven, and you on earth. Therefore, let your words be few. We shouldn't be, well, I promise to God above, I'm going to do this, or I'm going to do that. We should not be doing that. He says, keep your words few. Verse 4, when you make a vow to God, do not delay to pay it, for he has no pleasure in fools. Pay what you have vowed. Better not to vow than to vow and not pay. That's pretty good advice right there. It is better not to vow than to vow and not pay. So what about today? Are Christians allowed to make oaths? We see under the old law, they certainly were, but are Christians allowed to make oaths? Are they allowed to swear? Are they allowed to make promises such as that? And to be honest, that's been a question really throughout the years. And a lot of Christian groups have even gone to the point to say no. To the point that our country, now a lot of times when you're sworn into office, you'll be given the option either to swear or to affirm. And so that's kind of where that came from. But my question is that necessary? Well, if you turn to Matthew, the 5th chapter, verse 34, if you just read the first part of our text, boy, it sure sounds like that's what the Lord meant, right? Jesus said, but I say to you, do not swear at all. And it seems pretty cut and dry right there that we can just put a period on the entire statement, and that Christians are not supposed to swear. My question is, does this mean that every type of vow, every type of oath, and every type of swear is unacceptable in the eyes of God? That's what hopefully we'll discover. Does this include being sworn in office? Does this include wedding vows? Does this include the old swear to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth? Are all of those under what the Lord was talking about? And as we study through the New Testament, you realize if you take that stance and that approach, things seem to get a little muddy very, very quickly. And let me give you a couple examples. Do you remember the night that Jesus was arrested? He was brought forth before the Jewish officials. And the Jewish officials brought forth a bunch of false witnesses. And they began to question him. And it said Jesus just sat there. He would not answer them. And the high priest said, are you just going to sit there? Are you not going to answer these witnesses? Are you just going to sit there and ignore them? And then in Matthew, the 26th chapter, in verse 62, and the high priest arose and said to him, do you answer nothing? What is it these men testify against you? And Jesus would not respond. He just sat there. He took it. Until verse 63. But Jesus kept silent. And the high priest answered and said to him, I put you under oath by the living God. The King James Version says, I adjure thee by the living God. He's putting him under oath. Tell us if you are the Christ, the Son of God. And it was then, and only then, that Jesus responded to the high priest. He would not respond until he was put under oath. And remember what Leviticus said, if you had information and you were put under oath, you were required to answer. That is when Jesus answered and gave his response. He had been completely silent up until this point. But Jesus responded, verse 64, finally, it is as you said. That was his response, because he had to give a truthful response. He says, nevertheless, I say to you, hereafter you'll see the Son of Man sitting at the right hand of the power and coming on the clouds of heaven. Then he let him have it. But Jesus would not respond until he was placed under oath. That's that oath of summons. When you are required by law to say, he would. So since the high priest placed Jesus under an oath, he was required to answer. And furthermore, if Jesus had not answered, that would have been an admission that he was not the Christ. So when Jesus was placed under oath, he answered. What about the Apostle Paul? Now I've got about six of these we'll go through real quickly. The Apostle Paul loved to make oaths. Romans 1 and 9. God is my witness. But that's an oath. When you call upon God as a witness to what you are saying, that is an oath. It's a swearing. So Paul, Romans 1 and 9, for God is my witness, whom I serve with my spirit in the gospel of his Son, that without ceasing I make mention of you always in my prayers. 2 Corinthians 1 and 18, but as God is faithful, see that's another oath that Paul is swearing. 2 Corinthians 1 and 23, moreover I call God as my witness against my soul. That is a swear. That is an oath between Paul and God. Philippians 1 and 8, for God is my witness, how greatly I long for you with all the affection of Jesus Christ. 1 Thessalonians, I like the second one more than the first. I think this is neat. 1 Thessalonians 2 and 5, for neither at any time did we use flattering words, as you know, nor as a cloak for covetousness. And he says, God is witness. He says, we haven't done any of this, and to prove my point, let God be my witness. See, he's swearing an oath that he was telling the truth. 1 Thessalonians 5 and 27, I like this one. Because I like to give homework assignments sometimes. I'll say, hey, I want the congregation to go read this chapter. I've never said it like this. Apostle Paul says, I charge you by the Lord that this epistle be read to all the holy brethren. He was putting them under an oath with God as witness that they had to read this in their congregation. So the Apostle Paul quite oftentimes was often to use swears. He also did a voluntary vow. We're told about that in Acts 18 and 18. Talking about how Paul was about to leave, but it says he had his hair cut off at Cenchrea, for he had taken a vow. I don't know what that means, but the Apostle Paul had taken a voluntary vow, and I guess he said if something happened or something didn't happen, he was going to cut his hair off. Whatever the case was, he had to do it. He said he's going to shave his head, then he had to fulfill his vow. So we've got Christ is answering under oath. And now we have the Apostle Paul several times offering up oaths and swears. Let me give you another example. In the book of Revelation, we have an angel of God that also takes an oath. Verse 10, or chapter 10, verse 5, the angel whom I saw standing on the sea and on the land raised up his hand to heaven and swore by him. Speaking of God, swore by him who lives forever and ever, who created heaven and the things that are in it, the earth and the things that are in it, and the sea and the things that are in it, that there should be delay no longer. So the angel of God swears to God. And it's interesting, notice this part about the things that are in the earth and the things that are above it and the things that are below it. That's going to become important here in just a second. So we've got Jesus answered under oath. We've got the Apostle Paul invoking oaths in several of his writings. We have an angel of God swearing an oath to God. And we even have Almighty God Himself. In Hebrews chapter 6, verse 13, for when God made a promise to Abraham, because he could swear by no one greater, he swore by himself. Is there a contradiction here? It sure looked like in Matthew that he said, swear not at all. But yet we have Jesus accepting the oath. We have the Apostle Paul invoking several oaths. We have the angel of God swearing by God in the book of Revelation. And we have God Himself swore by Himself. So is there a contradiction? I think we need to go back to our text and look a little bit closer now. In Matthew chapter 5, he says, But I say to you, do not swear at all. But then he continues, neither by heaven, for it is God's throne, nor by the earth, for it is its footstool, neither by Jerusalem, for it is the city of the great king, nor shall you swear by your head, because you cannot make one hair white or black. You notice how Jesus pulls a couple of things out. And he makes it very specific. Swear not at all by heaven, or by earth, or by Jerusalem, or by your head. So the angel of the Lord in Revelation was swearing by heaven. And so the Apostle Paul, when he is holding his hand up and he's saying, I swear as God is my witness, he's swearing by heaven. And so the Apostle, or Jesus here in his writings in Matthew, is trying to make a distinction between what those kinds of oaths were and what the Jews of his day were doing. It's kind of interesting. At the time of Christ, the Jews had set up a very intricate system by which they could swear an oath but not be held accountable for their actions. It was kind of a fake oath. Little kids used to have this thing, I don't know if they still do it, if you crossed your fingers, that meant you could lie, and you could say something, oh, this kid not crossing my fingers. It's kind of the same idea that you could say something, but you would not be held accountable for it. Then we went through a phase, I guess when I was in junior high, you just added the phrase, just kidding, at the end of anything that you said. And you could say, well, I did this, just kidding. And it's like it absolved you of the word that you had just spoken. Well, that's what the Jews had done. They had this real intricate system. So it says, swear not at all by heaven. Well, what they figured out was, okay, the Jews had gotten together, the rabbis. Okay, well, if you swear by God, it's binding. But if we say, like the song, if we swear by the moon and the stars above, that's okay. You don't really have to mean it. You can just sort of mean it. If you swore by the temple, that was okay. You could get away with swearing by the temple. But if you swore by the gold on the temple, you had to fulfill it. And so the Jews had found all these little loopholes on everything that they were doing to try to get out of being held accountable to holding an oath. Because if you broke an oath, it was very serious. You had to go through a whole bunch of steps to absolve yourself of that sin. So now read Matthew chapter 23. See if this makes sense now. Matthew 23, verse 16, Jesus speaking. He says, woe to you blind guides who say, whoever swears by the temple, it is nothing. But whoever swears by the gold of the temple, he is obliged to perform. So if you made a swear, you made an oath by the temple, and you held your hand up to the temple, you didn't really have to do what you said you were going to do. That was just bawdy talk. Judge Judy would call that puffing. That's just where you're talking big, but you don't really have to fulfill it. But if you swore by the gold of the temple, then you had to do it. Crazy. Fools and blind, for which is greater, the gold of the temple that sanctifies the gold, rather. And whoever swears by the altar, it is nothing. But whoever swears by the gift that is on it, he is obliged to perform it. So you can swear to the altar, and it meant nothing. But if you swore to the gift on the altar, you had to fulfill it. Isn't that crazy? So they had all these little fake oaths going on back and forth that sometimes you had to fulfill and sometimes you didn't. That's what Jesus is attacking. He says, don't be swearing by heaven or earth. All these little loopholes, get rid of them. In fact, he's going to say in the next verse, just let your yes be yes and your no be no. Pretty simple. Let me give you a famous oath. Remember the night Jesus was arrested? We already talked about that a minute ago. Do you remember Peter was out in the courtyard? And people kept coming by him and saying, hey, I think this fellow right here, he was with Jesus. And he kept denying them. And he denied them again. By the third time, Peter was getting sick of it. And he says, Matthew's account, it says, he took an oath and he denied them. What kind of oath do you think it was? Do you think it was a fake oath? Or do you think Peter let him have it and said, I take an oath with God in heaven that I never knew him? The Bible doesn't tell us, but I have a feeling Peter probably was pretty specific in his oath. And it says he kept on cursing and making vows that he never knew Jesus. See, that's what Jesus was talking about. You got to be very careful what you say when you take a vow. So Matthew 5 and 37 tells us now, but let your yes be yes, and your no, no. For whatever is more than these is from the evil. In other words, a simple yes or no is sufficient. That's all we need. Then don't try to add some type of meaningless oath to puff yourself up to make yourself sound stronger and more powerful. There's no necessity for that. Again, I love my Judge Judy quotes. Not very often, or quite often, they'll have one of the defendants will say, listen, let me be honest with you. And she'll stop him right there and say, no, I don't want you to be honest. I want you to be dishonest to me, and I want you to lie to me. But a person will preface a statement, okay, let me tell you the truth. Well, you know they're a liar. Or if they preface it by, okay, I'm going to be honest with you, so I guess that means everything else they've said has been a lie. You shouldn't make statements like that. We don't want to pump ourselves up. If the answer is yes, say yes. If the answer is no, say no. Notice that this disrespectful language doesn't come from God. It says it comes from the evil one. When we start adding these swear words and we start adding these oaths that are not proper. Here we go. Before we criticize these first century Jews pretty harshly, maybe we need to consider our own language, the words that we use today. So now get ready so everyone can probably be offended in some form or fashion from this lesson this morning. What about swear words? Have you ever thought about the term swear words? You don't hear that much anymore. That's kind of an older generation. We talk about swear words. Why were they called swear words? If we use certain words to add truth or force to what we are saying, but we don't want the penalty that comes with a solemn oath, then we've done the exact same thing. And so there are a lot of Christians in the world, they would not think of using the Lord God's name in vain. But we say a whole bunch of other stuff. We want to skirt around the penalty of having God's name in vain, but we still want to add some force to our thoughts. Go find you about a 30-year-old man. That's all you got to do and you'll hear it. Ask him a question. Could you really run a 5-minute mile in high school? And they can't answer. Oh, you better blanky to blank blank believe it. You know what that is? That's an oath. You're swearing. We are swearing. I want you to believe me, and I want you to believe me so much, I'm willing to take an oath on it. Now, the thing is, we just don't make the oath to God. We use all sorts of other little words, and you can put a whole bunch of words right in there. Can you really throw that fastball 95 miles an hour? Oh, you better. And then we fill in a couple expletives here and there. Did you really buy that truck? Oh, man, I bought. And they just go on. That's why. Because we're swearing. We're offering an oath, but we're just not making it to God. We're doing no different than what the Jews were doing when they would swear to the temple, but they wouldn't swear to the gold on the temple. Pretty interesting. Have you ever thought about why they call them swear words? That's why. Some swear words directly use the name of God. Of course, I'm not going to say them from the pulpit this morning, but you've heard. They directly use the word of God. Other words are designed to prevent saying the name of God, but they still represent an oath. And we're doing no different than what the Jews did. And we say things, I swear I'm going to do this to... Oh, don't say that. Because we are swearing an oath. Even though we're not swearing it to God, it is no different than what the Jews did that Jesus got after them. They try to circumvent the penalty of a solemn oath. Do we ever use words like that? Do we ever use words to try to spice up our language a little bit and make sure everybody knows that we're serious? Dad, you better believe it. We say them all the time. We shouldn't say that. Because even though it seems benign, we shouldn't say things like that. We shouldn't say words like golly and gee and heck and darn. We shouldn't say those. Because that is no different from what the Jews were doing, trying to circumvent the oath. We're just making an oath to something else. We're trying to make it benign. But it is no different than what the Jews were doing that Jesus condemned them for. They're often used in daily conversations, not in court cases. And they're pronounced over trivial matters. Just common things people say that are not appropriate. Be careful what you say. Think about what you say. Matthew chapter 12 and 36 says, "But I say to you that for every idle word men may speak, they will give account of it in the day of judgment." Not just the oaths we swear to God, but every oath and every vow that we take. As Christians, we should recognize that seemingly harmless words are derivatives of profane words that are swear words. I've got an old lesson from my grandpa's. He talked about that. There's certain words. You can substitute whatever you want to and feel justified, but you better be careful. We're still swearing. And we're still trying to do and circumvent the truth. We're trying to circumvent just like the Jews did back then. So, are all oaths forbidden today? As best I can tell, and you may disagree with me here on this, but as best I can tell, best as George Batty can tell, and Guy in Woods, so I'm feeling pretty confident, the answer appears to be no. As evidence, I'll say Jesus answered under oath. The Apostle Paul swore several oaths. An angel swore an oath, and God himself swore an oath. So what was Jesus talking about? What is Matthew chapter 5 discussing? And I put in parentheses here, there's another passage in James 5 and 12 that basically covers the same material about swear not. I think both of these passages teach the same thing. Insincere, fake oaths are wrong. And we shouldn't do them. Period. We should not say insincere, fake things. Whether we change the words around and use euphemisms and better sounding words, we need to be careful about the words that we speak. Casual oaths or swearing is unnecessary. Just answer yes or answer no. And if you're a truthful person, everybody's going to believe you. You don't have the necessity to spice it up with a couple expletives in there to try to make it look like you're really serious this time. No. Just say yes and no. Matthew 5 also teaches that casual swearing comes from the evil one. So if we're called to a court case and we're asked to testify, you swear to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth? In my opinion, I don't believe the scriptures teach it's wrong for us to do that. I don't believe it's wrong for us to swear an oath to God in certain situations. As a witness in a courtroom or a wedding vow, I believe we have the right to do that. However, I will say, if it's against your conscience, then abstain from it. Then affirm. I will say I don't think there's any difference between swearing and affirming. As long as you say, "So help me God," you have made an oath to God. I don't believe that's what Jesus was discussing. I believe Jesus was talking about these empty vows, empty oaths that the Jews were making, swearing by the temple, knowing that they did not have to do what they said. But if they swore by the gold of the temple, they did. That's ridiculous. Be careful of every idle word which we speak. And it's something that we probably, every one of us in the last week, I would guess, have said some type of, probably not taking the Lord's name in vain. But I bet every one of us nearly has used some little word or some little phrase, not even thinking about it, that is no different than what the Jews were doing that Jesus condemned them for. So we need to be careful and think about every idle word that is spoken.